Welcome to Legend Youth. Come and join us today as we listen to one of our very own students, Hannah Grant, share her journey of overcoming fear. Our hope is that you will find something today in this podcast that strengthens your faith and uplifts your spirit. Take a listen, and we hope you enjoy it. She is sitting with us today to just share her testimony, her story with us. And so I'm excited to dive into this. What prompted you to do this, Hannah? Talk to us a little bit today.
Well, the Lord's been telling me to do this for a while, but, you know, I got a little psyched out, a little nervous because, I don't know, getting in front of people is really scary for me. So I feel like when the opportunity came up and we started doing this podcast, I was like, it'd be a perfect time to do it in a comfortable place.
Yeah. You know? So for the past couple of weeks, it's been kind of a slow up and coming process, but we've been able to publish a podcast. It's on all platforms. So if you're listening right now, you know that. But we're excited as our youth ministry is just sees this as an avenue for students to engage in spreading the gospel. And I think it's important today for students to just be honest and vulnerable and share what they're going through, because we live in a society. It's so different today than it was when me and Amber were growing up in the world as teenagers and even as kids, because like my kids are 10 and 7 and they know a little bit more about mental health at their age than we did at our age. And we're not afraid to tackle topics with them like fear and worry and anxiety. And so I'm just excited that you're here. I'm excited to get this started. And so we're just going to kind of roll with it. I mean, it's a vulnerable space. So for those who are listening today, we hope you hear the raw and honest testimony from Hannah. And who knows what the Lord's going to do in the next little bit. So is there anything anybody wants to say before we start asking some questions and getting started? I mean, how do you feel, Amber, about the world we live in today? How important is it for us to share stories like this?
Well, I think it's really important because I feel like the church has been very quiet on topics like this. And so a lot of the resources that our kids are going to, that are or just, not just kids, that even our church people are going to, they're not biblically based. They're not Christian based. I know that there are some out there, but I just think it's really important for us to talk about this stuff, to share what we've been through, so people know that, you know, there are other Christians, other Bible believing, God fearing people that I'll just call it what it is. They're attacked mentally, and that they can hear what the Lord has done and how the Lord has done things for other people, if that makes sense. Just, you know, my biggest thing, a lot of things I say about, you know, having conversations with my kids about things is I want to beat the world to having a conversation with my kids. I'm going to have conversations with my kids probably earlier than other people would have on different topics, because I don't want the world to shape their view of things. And so I feel like this is important because I feel like it's time for the church to take those conversations back and to have those conversations before or out in front of the world and the worldly view, and shape those conversations into biblical views centered around God. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I said a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. Another audience that I want to welcome into the podcast today is an audience from one of our ministries that partners with Legend Youth Ministries is called the Move Bus. And so the Move Bus is a bus here in Marshall County. It's actually a set of buses that we use to pick up sports teams. And gosh, they've taken senior trips this year. They've taken churches on trips. And so our goal on that bus is to do exactly what we're doing right here in this conversation, is to let people know. A lot of people get on those buses and they may have never been to church. And so some of our conversation is going to come from a church life, right? But a lot of the kids that get on our buses and teenagers that get on our buses have never been to church, but they may have heard of Jesus, or maybe they haven't. But today we want to just open the door to you guys and welcome you into this conversation and say that our goal here is to talk about the hard things. And so you may not have ever been to church, but chances are you've dealt with fear, shame, guilt. And so we want to take that time and just talk about it and then let you know that there's some truth to every thought of fear. There's truth in God, and that there's truth in His power and his plan for your life. And so we want to welcome you to that. So welcome to the Move Bus podcast as well. Hannah, we're glad you're here. So we're going to get started. Hannah, tell us a little bit about who you are, your last name, if you want to share that. I'm just Hannah.
Hannah Grant, you know, for those who don't know, I'm a pastor's kid. And that, like, it was really great growing up in a pastor's home. Like, I think about, look at my childhood and how amazing it was, because they always led by example, my parents. They always made sure we knew right and wrong. And they're always, you know, God was always around. And it was really great growing up in that home. But I'm also the middle child. And, like, you know, everybody talks about middle child, you're invisible, or, you know, you get forgotten. I didn't really deal with that necessarily. I kind of chose to be alone, but, you know, I don't know.
You're a loner?
Yeah. Sort of, yeah.
What makes you like to be by yourself?
As a child, I loved to be alone. I would play in my room for hours, and I didn't like to be with anybody else. Both my other siblings loved to be with people, and they always wanted to be with my parents. And even now, my parents have to, like, get on to me for staying in my room for too long, because I don't ever talk to them. And it's not really – I don't mean to not talk to them. I just – I don't know. I like being by myself.
Yeah. See, I do and I don't. I struggle being by myself at times. I mean, what about – I like to be with the people in my house. Sometimes, you know, I need a break from the kids for a few minutes, but I kind of get that. I kind of grew up with that. What about you? Were you a social butterfly?
I mean, no. I mean, I was a shy kid, so I cried a lot. But I just, even now, like, I kind of cherish both. I enjoy family time. I enjoy being with friends, and but I also enjoy quiet and watching my TV show that I like to watch, and, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, we can kind of relate to you a little bit on the pastor's kid thing. I was definitely a pastor's kid growing up in many different forms. My dad was either an associate pastor or a pastor my whole childhood. So that brought its own great, exciting things, and it also brought its own challenges.
Yeah.
And it really shapes your life as a kid to be a pastor's kid. Now, you have some of the best parents in the world.
Yes.
We love your parents, obviously. We get to do ministry with them. And so I'm thankful for them. I'm thankful for my parents. Amber's family was definitely connected. Her grandparents, both of her grandparents on both sides were pastors. Her mom and dad were not, but they were very closely connected to the church in that way, and served in many different forms. So we've been just, we're all on this couch. We're all church babies. obviously, what we experienced and what you experienced growing up is completely different. So I want to just dive into, you know, you're a middle child, so there's three kids in your house, right? Where now there's two.
Yeah.
All right. Because your older brother decided to leave, you know, and go to college, you know. How dare him.
The apple of your eye.
I joke with Hannah a lot about my love and affection for her older brother. He's kind of like my little brother, so I love it. But I want to talk to you about, I'm the oldest kid. Amber's not the oldest kid.
Nope, I'm the baby.
In her house, yes. So we have very different opinions of childhood. Like, I was always the first to do everything. I was a rule follower to the T. I paved the way for my brother.
Yeah.
Paved it for him.
Okay, but hold on. I got baptized first. I got my ears pierced first. And I was the rule follower, but I was the youngest kid.
Yeah. You were the breath of fresh air for your parents.
That's probably accurate.
You know, we're talking about being the middle child here. For me, when I say I paved the way for my brother, I mean, like, I don't necessarily mean that he had it easy because of me, but I definitely feel like because I followed rules and my parents, when my parents asked me where I was always there. Like, I was always doing the right thing. It made it a little easier for him to come along and be trusted, I guess. I never had to fight the idea that, oh, this happened before me, so now I'm dealing with the consequences because my older sibling didn't do right or whatever. But you're the middle child. What did that look like for you growing up?
It was the same with Seth. He was always a good child. He's always been the good child. Everybody loves Seth. You know, I've never met one person that doesn't like Seth. Yeah. And I don't, like, resent him for it. Like, I love Seth, and I understand he's a great person. It's just kind of funny because him as a child was probably a lot better than I was. Me as a child, I came along, and I was, like, I was a little sneaky. I was a little crazy. You know, people knew me as, like, kind of a bad kid in church because
you were the bad kid?
I mean, not bad, but, like, I would go around and kick people. You know, like, I was just kind of wild.
Yeah, I heard you were mean.
Yeah, I mean, I was mean to people. I don't know why, really. I don't remember. I've kind of hopefully grown out of that now.
You mean mug me a few times. I was, like, a worker. I worked in the daycare that you were in when you were.
Yeah, like, I remember.
2 or 3 or something like that. But Seth was always, like, 30 in a 7-year-old's body.
He was always very, like, mature.
And you were,
like, immature.
Very much did not want to speak to me most of the time that I would, like, try to interact with you.
I didn't like a lot of people. When I was little, I only liked a very small portion of people, and everybody else I didn't like. I don't know. It's weird.
So does it make you feel weird now? Like, Seth has a path of ministry, and he's moving on in ministry school, and I know that you guys have actually gotten closer as he's become an adult, and what does your relationship look like? What did your relationship look like with him growing up, and what does it look like now?
Well, when we were younger, you know, we're 2 years apart, so we, like, had our whole childhood together, and we fought like cats and dogs, pretty much. I mean, just kind of typical brother-sister stuff.
Yeah, my kids fight all the time.
So. Wrestling, me wanting to play with him, and he didn't like me, and then when we got older and he had to drive me everywhere, he didn't like that, which is understandable. But when he moved away, I feel like we understood each other a lot more, and we were able to have more mature conversations and be closer. And, I mean, I don't talk to him very much because he's busy and all that, but I definitely like how our relationship is now than it was.
Yeah, and I feel like when we hadn't got to where, like, we really haven't got to the pinnacle of your testimony yet. But I really feel like it's cool that God kind of matured him and matured you. Mm-hmm. At the same time, he started bringing you out of some things. I feel like y'all were able to talk about some things. Yeah. And
I've definitely gone to him for advice and stuff. Because when you're raised in the same home, it's just, a sibling is just, they have an understanding that nobody else can really get, you know? Yeah. You know how you're raised and your ideals and everything. It's just, he's really easy to talk to. And, you know, he's got a lot of wisdom for his age. So,
yeah, experience and wisdom.
Yeah.
Now, your younger sister, how was the age difference between you and your younger sister?
6 years.
That's a lot. I can hear the tension in your voice when you talk about it.
I love Abigail. I do. It's just, you know, we're a lot different places in our lives. And I could probably definitely be a better older sister. And I realize that. And I need to work on that. But it's a little hard.
You like driving her around? Like Seth had to drive you around?
It's fine. Like, I understand, though, how Seth felt. I mean, I can drive her around. It's, if she's quiet, yeah.
That's very rare. I've met her.
Yeah.
She's full of life.
Yeah.
She's the opposite of you. You're the quiet, reserved.
Yeah.
Kind of. Well, so there's days where we have to, like, pull conversation out of you.
Yeah.
And there's most, like, there's days with her, she's pretty much, like, always wanting to talk about something or always wanting to share something.
And I think that's also kind of being the middle child, at least for me, is I've always just kind of been quieter. And Abigail, you know, she's the baby.
Yeah.
And she's kind of like, not the focus, but, you know. So she just
she demands a lot of attention because of her age. Yeah.
She kind of makes up the space.
Ellery's the same way. I mean, she's, Abigail's what, 11?
Mm-hmm.
And Ellery's 7. And so there's a 5-year difference there, but she's the baby and she demands it all, which is, it's what makes them. And I see so much, like, I feel like the Lord speaks to me daily about, like, raise her and don't try to tame that because I'm going to use it. So he'll use it one day.
And I think he'll even use, like, everything that, if I ask you about your quietness, would you say it holds you back? Or would you say that do you feel like it holds you back? Or do you feel like it's just, are you good with it? Like, how do you feel about that?
Some days I really wish, like, I look at people who are very extroverted and can just go up to people and talk to them and go up on a stage and talk and not have any nervousness. And I was like, I'm always like, man, I wish I could be like that. Like, I wish I didn't get nervous talking to people I don't know. And, you know, I wish I could be, like, open and chatty, but I always make awkward conversation. I'm pretty bad about keeping a conversation up with people. So
I know. I can understand that. It's like the first couple minutes of breaking the ice, and then you're just like, what do I talk about now? Like, I'm getting nervous.
Yeah.
Growing up in a preacher's home and growing up with the middle child taught you a lot, right? Taught you a lot?
It was amazing. Like, I look back at my childhood and I think, how amazing. I mean, I never went without. Like, my parents are amazing. I had everything I needed or I wanted. We had four-wheelers and land and everything else.
So you don't feel like you lacked anything in your childhood?
No, I don't. But I do see how I got, like, I don't know how to explain it, a different perception of how to deal with things from my childhood.
So you're here tonight because of your testimony. I'm listening to your story. Just if I was sitting in a, I know your story, but, like, sitting in a room with you tonight, if I was a new person, never met you before, I would look at your childhood and be like, man, you were raised by wonderful parents.
Mm-hmm.
You had all of the things. And by the way, your parents are cool. Like, they buy you, like, the four-wheelers.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
I mean, I've had, like, all kinds of animals. Pet turkeys.
Oh, yeah.
Chickens.
Like, a whole farm.
Whole farm. Annabeth is a gardener. She'll bring it all around.
Pool. Hot tub.
Yeah, I got the pool. You got all these things in your life. You know, what could possibly have been going on in your life that would have caused you to have a story?
Well, it's funny. I was talking to my mom about this stuff because I realized the other day that I haven't even, like, talked to my parents about stuff I struggled with as a child. Like, I don't think they ever knew. And when I told them, they were a little surprised. They didn't know that I dealt with it to this extent. But when I was little, I really dealt with fear. And I don't really know where it came from. But I just know I dealt with it, and I have early memories of, like, fear about anything. I mean, my mind would go to the absolute worst if anything happened. Like, if I didn't even see my parents for a couple of minutes, I would automatically assume the worst. And like I said, I like to be alone. Like, I liked to be in my room alone and play alone, but I could not go without knowing where my parents were. I had to always know where they were. And if they ever moved from where I thought they were, I would panic and automatically think they were, like, kidnapped or they left me, like, automatically assuming the worst. And I realize now that's probably not normal. But, I mean, there's other things in my life, like when I was always afraid. I don't know where this fear, I was afraid that my family was going to die in their sleep. Like, I don't know where that came from. And I would go check on them every night. I'd make sure, I make a point to tell them good night, love you, just in case. And then I would go check on them
Wow.
when they were asleep because I was afraid they were going to die. And I thought I would have to save them. It's like,
Hannah to the rescue.
Yeah. 8-year-old over here.
I can relate to fear in childhood because my life was a lot like yours. I was very, very blessed. My parents, I never really had to want for anything. I mean, we weren't rich by any means, but if I wanted it, my parents found a way. My dad worked really hard to make it happen for us. So, I remember, like, I have flashbacks sometimes, and I have Tennessee allergies, so I sound a little weird. I remember, like, having it being like Christmas morning, and I got everything I wanted for Christmas, but irrational fear would come mm-hmm. over me so fast.
Yeah,
and everybody else, it was like living in a bubble, like looking around the room and seeing everybody else living this life. It looked like no one was worried or had any mm-hmm. thoughts of care. But inside, I was a wreck.
Yeah.
Inside, I was tormented. And so, go back to your early childhood of fear. What is one of the first fears ever you remember? Moments of fear. How early do you think this started in your life?
I can go back to our first house. So, I would have been between the ages of 1 and 8, I think, when we moved. So I remember the first time I realized I was afraid of like trapped spaces because I went in the bathroom and I guess I couldn't like open the door. The door got jammed or my hands were wet. I don't remember. I couldn't open the bathroom door for a hot minute. It took me a couple minutes to get it open, and then for years after that, I was afraid I'd get trapped in spaces, and I couldn't ever, like, close doors. Like, that's probably my earliest memory as a little kid. But then after that, I remember going, I mean, I was probably, like, 11 or 12. I remember in our trailer where we used to live, I used to get up in the middle of the night, and I would go sleep in our couch in our living room because it was in the middle of the house because I was afraid someone was going to break in our house and I would have to go get dad.
Right.
Because I thought nobody would wake up because our dogs would bark and nobody would wake up. All my family had fans except for me. And I was so scared somebody was going to break in and I would have to save us. Like, so I, for months of my life, I'd wake up around 12 and go on the couch and like sit there and end up falling asleep. And wake up about 5 in the morning and then go back to my bed.
I mean, looking back now, it probably seems silly, but then yeah. It felt very real.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about how that grew into your teenage years and just kind of how it got really heavy on you. But I want to read this scripture really fast. It's 2 Timothy 1 and 7. And it says, "For God has not given us a spirit of fear and timidity, but of power, love, and self-discipline." I want to read it out of a lot of people don't like this version anymore, but this is my favorite version of this scripture. It says, "For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of sound mind." And so I think that's the King James version. And I think that the other version sounds good too. Self-control, love. Power and love, no fear. But the King James Version says it best, I feel like, when it says sound mind. How many moments in your childhood, even in your teenage years, at the worst of all this that we're about to dive into, did you just feel like your mind wasn't very sound? Like, there's been so many moments in my life that not fear was like the entryway, and then because I would operate in fear, my mind, I didn't think clearly.
Yeah.
you know, like I couldn't rationalize. Mm-hmm. And most of the fears that I was dealing with at the time were irrational anyway.
Yeah.
But I couldn't see it at the time. But it's almost like I could feel it and I knew it was irrational, but I couldn't get past the fear or the wall of whatever that was, whatever it was at the time. So, I mean, explain, talk about, like, did you ever feel that you were alone? Did you have hope in those moments that you were fearful, or what did that look like for you?
Well, for the longest time, I didn't realize I was operating in fear. I did not realize at all during my childhood. I mean, I just recently, within the last year, looked back at my childhood and realized how much I did operate in fear. I guess I thought it was normal. I guess I thought everybody dealt with these irrational fears that, you know, you automatically think the worst will happen. You're always thinking the worst is going to happen. You're like, I had a big imagination as a kid, and, you know, that had benefits and disadvantages to it, having a big imagination, because I could visualize these terrible things happening to my family, and I felt like I couldn't protect them, you know?
Yeah. Imagination is a gift from the Lord. But at the same time, the enemy knows how to use our thoughts against us. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he can definitely speak to our minds. So today, like on our Move Bus site, and a lot of times in youth ministry, we talk about things that we can touch, see, and feel. A drug addiction, you pick that thing up and you touch it. You know, if you're addicted to pornography, you look at it, you log into it, you see it. If you can't get away from those things, it's a little different of a walk than what we're dealing with in this conversation. I think mental health, mm-hmm. The Lord calls us in 2 Timothy to have a sound mind. Mm-hmm. He tells us the very opposite. You're a Gen Z person. So the suicide rate in your generation is astronomical. It's one of the biggest, highest rates we've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
That tells me that your generation is struggling with having a sound mind.
Yeah.
That tells me that your age demographic is really finding it hard and grasping at straws when it comes to mm-hmm. finding truth. You're coming from a generation that preaches to live your own truth.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say to your generation now? I mean, you grew up in church. You grew up in... you've been a church girl your whole life.
Yeah.
How does that, I mean, what is truth to you? And did you live in the truth? Did you walk in that truth the whole time? Or, I mean, tell me about how that looked in your life, because a lot of people are listening right now. Maybe they weren't the church girl. They weren't the person raised in the house of the Lord. So if just because you were there doesn't mean that you were kept safe from fear. Just talk about it.
Well, because I grew up in a Christian household with my parents, God was always around me. I was always at the church. You know, I was always involved in all of the ministries growing up. But because it was all around me, I guess I didn't feel the need to pursue a relationship with God on my own. And that cost a lot for me because I didn't put the Bible as my truth. You know, I just kind of lived. I didn't do anything bad. You know, I didn't, you know, go out and do all these crazy things. I obeyed my parents. You know, I was a good kid, but I just didn't, I guess, feel the need to make God the center of my life and really pursue going deeper with Him until the last couple of years, really.
Yeah. What shifted?
Well, when I went through, when all of the things that started from my childhood and all this fear kind of all hit me in my face all at once. That's when I really had to seek God and really lean on Him, because I was like, I can't do this on my own.
How old were you when all this happened?
15. Yeah.
15 years old. What happened exactly?
Well, because all the fear from my childhood and going back to like imagination that I had as a child, And I can look back at my childhood and see all of the games, the plot lines I used to create in my head. But as I got older, instead of fear that I dealt with as a kid, it got a lot more serious and it got a lot more scary. And I can remember the first time that I dealt with it in 2022, November. I don't remember like the day or whatever, but I remember when it all just kind of hit me all at once. And I had no idea what to do because I didn't have that foundation of the Lord, you know? I didn't have that relationship to go back on.
So I'm reading the scripture here about imaginations. And in 2 Corinthians 10 and 5, it says that we cast down imaginations and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, and we bring captive every thought to the obedience of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, the Lord gives us imagination. I mean, He birthed so many things in the Word through a thought that through speaking to someone's thought life. I mean, Abraham and Moses and all the prophets. I mean, Abraham, he knew the voice of the Lord. He knew the thoughts that were of him. He struggled at times to understand Moses. You know, I think about Noah. I think about him building the ark.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about how he must have pictured it in his mind before he laid it out. So that to say, I mean, when you were a kid, do you remember people telling you to use your imagination?
Yeah.
Hey, go play. But especially now, like, tell my kids, get off the screen and go play. And they're like, what do I do? Well, use your imagination, you know. Go play McDonald's or something.
I was great at that.
Yeah, we loved not like mud pies, and we built houses on like rocks outside in the yard. Like,
we played church a lot too.
Yeah, we baptized people in the swimming pool just for fun. But it's interesting that the Bible, it tells us that we do have a responsibility to cast down certain imaginations, certain things. And there's other scriptures out there that talk about footholds and when I picture a foothold, to not let something come into your life and be a foothold, I think about someone, just as the door is about to close, someone sticks their foot in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if someone was chasing you and you were trying to shut the door on them, but they got just enough of their foot or their arm in the door to keep it open. I feel like fear is that.
Yeah.
And we treat fear like, I've been very guilty with my kids, and the Lord's changed my opinion about it. But I've been very guilty in the past when they say they're scared to go to their bed, or if they're scared of something. I've been very guilty about just, hey, you're just being afraid. Quit being a chicken, you know?
Mm.
But what we have to slow down and realize is that fear starts small.
Yeah.
And as you were a kid and you had these irrational thoughts about your family dying or not knowing where they were, like they're trying to go into the convenience store and you're sitting in the car.
Yeah.
I remember your dad telling me that.
Yeah, and so, like, I forgot about that.
There's been so many things that you just could shrug off as little bouts of fear. But you're saying in 2022, it all just came piling on top of you.
Yeah, well, it really started, it was like September, October of 2022. And it wasn't really fear at first, because I had become complacent, because I didn't feel the need. I didn't have this foundation of a relationship with the Lord. Like, I was in church. I knew how to speak in tongues. You know, I knew what the Holy Spirit was like. I had been baptized, all of that. Like, but I didn't continually seek God every day.
Yeah.
So I didn't know how to hear His voice. I didn't know how to talk to Him one-on-one.
Yeah.
So when what happened is, just for a couple of seconds, every now and then, for like a couple months, there would just be these moments where this, I guess now looking, it was a spirit, and it would come on me, and like there was just pit feeling of just hopelessness. All of the sudden, it would all hit me, and I didn't have motivation. I didn't see a purpose in anything. I didn't want to do anything. I didn't see a meaning in life. Like, it was just like all at once it hit me. And that continued. And at one point, most of the time I could just shrug it off, you know, in a right. couple of seconds, be like, okay, that's weird. And it wouldn't bother me. But one time I remember it came on for a whole week. I couldn't shake it. And I went to youth and y'all prayed over me and I was good. I walked out of there with peace. And for like a month, I was good, but I didn't change anything about my walk with God. I didn't try to seek him more. I didn't try to ask God, hey, what was that? Was that something I should be concerned about? Is that something I need to be fighting off? I just went back to my life, what I was doing before, which is just living. You know, you just live through cycles. You just kind of, you know, I wasn't seeking God at all.
Yeah.
But, and I guess that opened the door to where the devil could be like, okay. And then he just put it all on me in November when I don't remember the day or anything, but I remember the moment sitting in my mom's car driving and just random thought, very vivid, of suicide. It was just, I won't say exactly how it was, but it was there. And it just, all of a sudden, never thought about it, never occurred to me, never wanted, you know, like, I was not unhappy with my life.
Yeah.
But it came on me, and immediately the fear gripped me. Like, I was automatically afraid. And I don't know if y'all ever dealt with this, or, but like, for some reason, when I'm afraid of something, I'll like dwell on it. It's like almost like I get obsessed with it. I don't know if that makes any sense, but...
Oh, yeah. We could talk a long time about that. Amber married... I always joke with her and say, I'm sorry you married a crazy person. because I will obsess... I came out of alignment with... with your Aunt Donna.
Mm-hmm.
I came out of alignment with her in a prayer session one time. Because I came out of alignment with a diagnosis on my life that I was obsessively compulsive, that I would obsess over random thoughts, that these imaginations that the enemy brought into my life, that I was supposed to take captive.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't really my choice to obsess on them. Like I would, if I could choose, but the enemy was constantly tugging at me, telling me, later in my life, I figured out that, I say later in my life, a few years later, the same time you were struggling, I was struggling.
Yeah.
With something a little similar.
Which helped.
Yeah, which is how we got this whole story came about because we started being honest with each other. And, you know, since then, the Lord's really showed me. And I love that we're talking about imagination tonight because I feel like there's some giftings that the Lord gives us.
Yeah.
That he gives us at birth. Mm-hmm. And the enemy fights that from day one.
Yeah.
So y'all hear me when you're listening to this podcast. If you're depressed today, if you're anxious today, if you're fearful today,
mm-hmm.
That means that there is something on your life that is so much bigger than what you can see right now. That means that you have something on you that God wants to use in you and God has plans for, and the enemy sees that. And so he's attacking that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think you can see that now on your life, and you can attest to that. Sorry, you may hear some clanging in the back. Got my kids cornered to the back of the house, but we're a family here, so we're just going to be family on this podcast. Amber, talk a little bit. Tell us what's on your mind. Amber is kind of like you. She gets here, she gets to listening, and she gets all captivated. I want her to share. You remember this time in her life. Talk a little bit about what you saw or.
I don't know.
Or about me being obsessive.
I have no idea where to go here, so just bear with me. This, for me, this is not really something that I've personally dealt with a lot. I deal with fear, but most of the time that I deal with fear, I'm able to come out of alignment with it and move on. Now there have been times that like I've had those, I don't even know how to say it.
Nagging.
Yes. Just those nagging thoughts that do like to stick around. But for the most part for me, so for a while it was after I married Jordan, there were things that he didn't share with me. Not that he kept anything from me, but just that, you know, he didn't, like we said earlier, the church didn't really talk about this much. And I don't know. I remember when I was pregnant with Holder, that was at one point that it really hit you really hard during that. And you kind of shut down on me and shut me out, which then that's when I did have fear. Cause I was like, I'm pregnant and he's going to leave me because he's not talking to me today. But really what it was just you trying to figure out how to deal with what the enemy was throwing at you and using to attack you. And, the Lord has really dealt with him about speaking out.
Mm-hmm.
And so the conversation opened up after that. And it's been kind of, there has been like a roller coaster of that, but the last several years, the conversation's really opened up, which actually kind of helps when he talks about that, says it out loud, helps process that stuff out a lot of times. I mean, do you feel like that's truthful? I don't know.
Yeah. Gosh. Is this how you feel right now? Because she started talking about that time in my life, and I was like, God, I started sweating. Because you remember how real it feels.
Yeah.
When the enemy comes in like that.
You kind of forget how real it felt.
Yeah.
Until you start thinking about it again. Like, wow.
And I wasn't very vocal.
Yeah,
I'd lived neither. In a bubble about just hearing people say they won't understand and you should just deal with this on your own. I did have a support system. I wasn't by myself.
Yeah.
But like, I was scared to tell Amber a lot about what I was dealing with at the time. So kudos to you for
It was jumping hard
because he was scared I wouldn't understand. And I'd be like, bro, you need to fix that. But although I don't understand it myself because I haven't really experienced it. Like, I don't look at that and say, well, you need to, I don't understand that. You need to fix that. I know that the enemy uses stuff. He uses different things to fight you than he does me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not going to experience everything that you experience, and that's okay.
Yeah.
But we do have to be understanding for each other.
I
guess I don't know.
And I want to just kind of take the moment on this podcast right now to talk to everyone listening and to tell you that the Bible says is that we overcome the enemy by the word of our testimony.
Yeah.
And so I hope that this testimony right now is helping you overcome things in your life. And Hannah talked about suicide.
Yeah.
You talked about the first thought that scared you to death was a suicidal thought.
Yeah.
That obviously came out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And you knew that you had to do something with it. And you're grappling with the idea that this is not me.
Yeah.
But it won't go away.
Yeah.
I mean,
see, this kind of goes back to being raised in a Christian household. I immediately kind of like denied it, that I was dealing with it, because when it happened, when I got that first thought, and I just kept dwelling on it because I was so scared of it.
Yeah.
And I just, that it stayed with me.
Yeah.
And it was attacking me everywhere. Like everywhere I looked, I couldn't get rid of that vivid image of it. But I was like, no, I can't deal with that. Like, I'm not supposed to deal with that. I have a good home. I have a good family.
Right.
There's no reason. I always thought people who dealt with like suicidal thoughts were like people who, you know, had an abusive home or something. You know, they had really traumatic life events.
Yeah.
Lost somebody. And they were like, like it would be more understandable for them to go through that to feel like that than for me. I felt like it wasn't justified. Like, okay, you're being dramatic, you know. So I automatically tried to be like, no, but then it was still, I was still dwelling on it and I was still dealing with it.
Yeah.
And it was so hard. And for months, I mean, this happened before I really ever spoke to anybody. It was from like November to February.
Yeah, something like that.
February, early March. So it was like, and I can remember all the times it got really worse at night. And what would happen is I didn't know what to do. Like the thoughts were so loud, it drowned out my own thoughts. Yeah. And it was just, you know, I dealt with that, what I talked about, that gut feeling of just hopelessness and no motivation. And that came with the suicidal thought. It like came with it and fear.
Yeah.
And so now, you know, most people like they'll get depressed and then there'll be like suicidal thoughts.
Yeah.
Mine was like opposite.
It was making you depressed that you couldn't shake it.
Yeah. Like I was dealing with it and then I would get depressed and it was almost like justifying those thoughts. It was like the enemy trying to justify it and be like, well, you are feeling this way. You know, that's why. And it was just like a whole mind game, a whole scheme that I didn't know how to work around because I didn't hear, I couldn't hear, I couldn't hear God's voice because I didn't have that foundation.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would go up to my parents and ask for prayer, but I never told them what it was because I could not dare to speak it because I was like, no, there's no way.
Yeah.
Because I was still denying it, but I wanted prayer because I was dealing with it.
Right.
So I would go ask for prayer and I'd just be like, hey, I just need some prayer. And they'd pray over me. Yeah. I wouldn't really feel any better. I'd go to bed and I'd be so scared. I mean, I remember some nights I was like, somebody needs to handcuff me because I thought I was going to lose control of my body. As crazy as that sounds.
No, I feel it.
I thought I would literally start to believe the thoughts that were so loud. I mean, it filled my brain 24/7. All of those thoughts. So I literally wanted someone to handcuff me so I couldn't do what the enemy was trying to get me to do.
Yeah.
And it was just like,
I totally can feel that.
It was so overwhelming that I literally, I mean, I spent a whole week. I slept with my parents in their bed. Like it got that bad. And I never told them. I'm sure they knew what I was dealing with. I'm sure. I mean, I'm sure they had a clue because I just didn't want to go to my own bed. I was so scared of being alone, which is funny because when I was little,
that was where you were.
I loved to be alone. I loved to be by myself, play by myself. And I'd play for hours by myself and I was fine. But during this time, I could not stand to be alone because I was so afraid of what was going to happen.
I feel like we just need to address it right now that the enemy only attacks you and what you love the most. Hey guys, we want you to hear the rest of Hannah's story. So check out part 2 of this podcast.